WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're at a state fair in the 21228 in the Ville, homeland of Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive, and Ted Vanatoulis, whose new homeland is next to me at Baltimore's beautiful Inner Harbor.
I'm a city resident.
We've told a lot of stories here, and you guys have dominated with some great tales, but the real reason we brought you out is the here and the now of the election season. Yep. By the way, hold April 14th, Baltimore Positive doing something special that afternoon to celebrate our one-year anniversary. You moved into the city. Sort of know you as the Towson Times, you know, and the media.
All those
Jeff,
local papers.
The Owings Mills Times.
Yeah, sure, man. And I can't believe I've never known you. I'm kind of embarrassed. I've never had a coffee with you. I think you share 1,000 friends who speak so highly of you. You're now my next-door neighbor. We got to at least go get a bowl of ramen together.
It's a great place,
by the way. It's a great place. Yeah, it is. There's a line out the door.
Yeah.
If I tell everybody, I'll never be able to get a bowl of ramen. Downtown and Baltimore and where we are, where were you living before? I don't know. And how long have you been in and out of downtown to see what it's become? Because you and I are neighbors. We walked through it, and we want it to be better.
And why did you make the decision at this point in your life to move back to the city? Great
stuff. Well, you know, I was born and raised in the city. I became the first county executive who was born and raised in the city in Highlandtown. My wife, then when we lived in the county as county executive, my wife for 20 years has been trying to get us to move back into the city. She loves city environment. And I said, I was county executive. I really shouldn't do that. But I looked at the city, and I realized this is what we ought to be doing. If we're not moving in, at least we've got to be helping.
Is this the part where I hug you and say thank you?
Because at its core,
it's foundational to fixing Baltimore.
And you believe in this city,
absolutely.
Don't you,
and you know that from my relationship with Kevin and with the county. And when we came in, by the way, we really... Don Schaefer and I were very close, and we really started this kind of intimacy with the city. We did a lot of things that people didn't know. We had a joint county-city choir. Very simple. But when they were up on the stage, those kids, there was no difference between the city and the county. And Don and I would introduce it and work it out. People could see. We had every department head would meet with their counterpart in the city on a monthly basis.
Regionalism before it was popular.
Before, and not electing, not regional government, but regional relationships. When a fire was in Dundalk, the city fire department would go out. If it was in Highlandtown.
We're all drinking the same water.
Absolutely.
I'm drinking Liberty Pure Solutions, but you're all drinking the same water. Yeah.
So we felt really that it was an important element. And I think we passed it on to the county executives, particularly to Kevin. But every county executive since then, I think, has had a more intimate relationship. Well, for example, one other example, the cultural subsidies for the city, the symphony, the other cultural centers. The county, when I got in, was giving about $40,000 to those institutions. We got it up to $1 million.
And that's
important.
And now it's about $4 million.
Yeah, and then everybody carried it on because it's county people that go into town. So we really need, and I know you know about the relationship that Kevin and I had, and what he did was, I think, extraordinary.
Ted, Nestor probably doesn't know this story. Talk a little bit. You were really the first county executive to talk about the city. That didn't happen before you.
It just was not politically.
It just
didn't happen.
No, absolutely. Ted was the campaign first, against the city.
Yeah, Ted was the first one to say we're all in this together, and his legacy goes on years later.
Well, by the way, Stuart Pittman coming on in 2 weeks. Barry Glassman coming on in 2 weeks.
Good. So I mean, lean those on those guys. Yeah, they got to be helping out too.
Good.
We're going to talk about that.
Good.
But everybody remembers Freddie Gray riots. No need to go back over it. But Baltimore County contributed a number of police resources. Ted called Kevin and called me, and he said, hey, and this is where Ted was invaluable. Said, I got an idea. I think it might be politically tough, but I
remember
think it
the
would
other what the other counties were doing. They were billing the city.
Right. Everybody was billing the city
for their
police resources that they sent in. Ted said, you know, I think it would be a real gesture, since we're all in this together, if the county considered forgiving the overtime and the cost of police because they were neighborly. And Kevin and I were together. These calls came in. Kevin said, geez, I love that idea. He didn't care that it might not play well in Baltimore County. We had councilmen who criticized it.
Yep.
We had segments of the community who criticized it. And Kevin he took that to heart. He did that, and then he did more. And then he knew the spirit of that. And if people will remember, Ted, you'll remember, he went out and did Mother's Day videos saying, get back to the city.
Right.
I love taking my kids to the zoo.
Stuff.
Who
right.
wants
he knew
to live in a Cockeysville or an Owings Mills where you don't utilize downtown Baltimore, right?
Well, don't knock the county. We just have to get
him.
But if they're not coming
to the city, who is?
Yeah. No, you're right. And more than that, having an attitude about the city. Look, we have a very, you guys are doing great with this positive, but we have a real problem here. It's one of the reasons we're looking to buy the Sun paper, for example.
Well, you just can't drop the timeout now. You just can't drop that.
Trying to buy that since 1978.
We had Matt Gallagher. We right. laughed with Matt.
I'm going to publish it. Don't
Gallagher.
You know in my dreams?
We had Matt on last week, president of the Goldsecker Foundation.
Oh, right. Yes,
really gave an important rationale as to why some of the important Baltimore foundations, his included, are thinking that the way to empower local journalism is to have a nonprofit group by the Sun. We laughed and we said, call me crazy, but I bet Ted Venatulis is involved in it, because every time somebody's talking about buying the Sun, the next sentence is, and Ted Venatulis is, why do you care so much about the Sun, Ted, and why should we do this?
First of all, I've been a publisher, and I know the impact that papers can have. Not so much today, but certainly they could. Except for the decline because of
the concept
digital,
of media and
information
is powerful.
The newspaper is the most important ingredient. These programs are all terrific, but it's really been a newspaper. They do two things. They expose things. They send us information, and they do some exposure of things that shouldn't be happening. But the second thing is they're cheerleaders. They got to cheer for the city, and that combination is really important. So we felt that when they first started out years ago to sell the Tribune family, the McCormick family began to sell the Tribune, we went after it. Bob Embry, Walter Sondheim, and myself. We made a bid.
What's a powerhouse team there?
It was a pretty good team. Walter was just a great statesman.
Everyone and speaks
Bob
of him. And Bob's daughter's lovely, too.
Absolutely, right. It was a pretty good team. I knew the newspaper business at the time, so... We didn't get it. Sam Zell bought it. We offered him $500 million at the time. We had all the investors in town. Everybody came together because we wanted to have the institution locally owned. We thought that would really be great. So we didn't get it. Sam Zell got it, and he didn't want to sell. We went to him. Finally, a few months afterwards, when the deterioration... He paid $13 billion for it.
Yeah, what does he care about Baltimore?
He just wanted this institute, the newspaper business. He borrowed all the money. The newspaper business began to collapse. He lost his money. He called us and said, do you guys still want to buy the Sun? Because we had tried to buy it from him. And I said, sure, send us the money. Send us the information. We saw the information. 9 or 10 months later, we offered him $50 million from $500 million. That was the level of deterioration in the newspaper business at that time because of the whole digital world. So we offered him $50 million. He came back and said, we'll take $25 million for the paper, but we want to keep the real estate because we were going to buy all the assets. We said, sure. We began to negotiate and then went into bankruptcy. And the judge wanted to sell the whole thing. And that's when the series of these hedge funds and investment bankers, whoever, began to buy it. And the deterioration actually began under Zell. Began to laying people off, thinning the size of the paper.
Well, you know, it's my blood, right? My first job was as a writer. John Steadman was my spiritual godfather.
Well, you got some great old guys.
Well, I would just say this, and I said this to Gallagher, and I want to say this to you, because you sell ads for a living. I sold ads for a living. I saw recently somebody got uppity on Facebook about they got a bad review in the Sun, that the French fries were cold or whatever. Like, and then they say, well, F the Sun. We're not going to be involved. We're never going to buy. We're not going to advertise. We want them to go away. And I'm thinking to myself, no, you don't. You don't want them to go away. And I don't know in our culture, in our society, not just Baltimore, because I talk about the New Orleans Times-Picayune and going to publishing 2 days a week or 3 days a week or whatever. Who will be the ones that are helping your friend Nancy Pelosi to expose? I mean, we just exposed something in front of the entire world where half of the people running our Senate said, we don't even, willful ignorance, we don't even want facts anymore. Yeah. So I really do question how much our society wants facts. And then the businesses that need to your point, if a foundation says, yeah, we're going to buy it, until the Goldsecker Foundation, no offense, Matt, until they get investigated by the paper, then no one wants wants a paper anymore, right? You want a paper until they go after institutions.
That's why the new
owners.
I'm not too worried about them.
Investigating. But you know what I'm saying? Right. But when those foundations become the people who power it, to me it's like politics. When politics is powered by donors, then you do have a switch in where the power is for the paper, right?
I think you do if you do two things. First, you do get local ownership who are accountable, whom we know. We were worried about buying it and then having to close it down because we had built up our reputations. We don't want to be the one to do that. So we had come to the conclusion today that it's got to be a nonprofit and therefore get huge community support as subscribers, as donors, as advertisers, because the money's not going into anybody's pocket. But that does not immunize if Matt and the Gold Secretary, they're all come in. Bob Embry is really leading the charge.
That's two big foundations, Ted. Able Foundation.
No question. I'm not saying it's not viable. I'm saying how do you make it function as a critical organization? I go back to French fries, foundations, donors, just in general, to be a journalistic institution to out problems and still be supported financially by sponsors,
because
by local sponsors.
Or there'll be donors at the time is what they'll be. In other words, you are making a charitable contribution.
So there will
to
be
the
no
newspaper.
Advertisers?
No, there will be advertisers, but they'll be like public broadcasting.
I'm going to say,
essentially.
Right.
Public broadcasting
patrons,
has
patrons, I guess they call.
Nonprofit has to make money.
Right.
Now, let me finish the point.
Okay, sure.
Right. Because they can't be immunized. Nonprofits cannot be immunized from the reporting. You can't do that.
As a result,
because they are subject to examination and they should be.
Well, Catherine Pugh's going to prison because of it.
Exactly right. And if you don't do it, then it's not right. They shouldn't own it. But I think the people of Bob Embry, Matt, they understand this. I'll tell you a little story. Johnny Patarakis, and I'll name Johnny's name, because he was a really terrific guy. And I knew him well, and Schaefer
knew him well.
I sort
of grew up together.
Yeah. He was one of our, Bob had a group of people to give for investors. Walter had some, and I had some. Johnny was one of mine. I went to Johnny. I said, Johnny, we want to buy it. Son, we'd like to get you in there. Oh, I'm in there. I don't like those guys. They rough us up too much. I said to Johnny, if you think if I'm involved with it, you're going to call me and say, fire that reporter because he gave you a bad story. I said, forget it. You don't want to get into this, because the folks who do this, the reporters, they have a different value system. Money's not important to them. They have a different sense of what their role is, what their job is. It would be like bringing somebody in and they dump on your bakery. I said, you wouldn't want that. That's what you would be doing if we fired a reporter because he offered a bad paper. Send us a letter. We'll have a column that you can do every month. We're going to have every investor do their own column.
I think ideologically, I love what you're saying. In the real world, there are people every day who say, I will not support you because you're too hard on the Orioles.
I know.
Or you're too hard on whatever the donor is.
By the way, we are negotiating with them now, okay? Again,
are you optimistic at all, Ted? I know you've been there, done
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I got to keep my optimism up. We've heard back. They don't want to do it now, but they said stay in touch. We might want to do it down the road. So we got to be optimistic because this city, this town, this region cannot lose another institution like this.
Right.
And if we lose it because they collapse it, there's nothing left there. What a blow. I mean, like losing the ball club.
No, it was like losing Leg Mason.
But losing the Orioles.
Yeah.
At this
critical.
Point in our...
Right.
So we're going to try. We're going to stay with it. We're going to, no matter what, we're going to continue to... It's been 15 years, you're right. But maybe this will be the time.
Well, we wish you good luck.
I know one thing. We'd have local love. It would have what it needs.
Right.
It needs the same thing the Inner Harbor needs.
Absolutely.
It needs the same thing everything
the
in Baltimore needs.
Absolutely.
It needs local people
right.
who love it and care about it, and the counties around the outside to come and be drawn
together.
To it.
Vision, and it does need regional support. I want to talk about that at some point regional.
Well, we're talking about the regional. We're sitting, if you're out there in the car, we're sitting with former Baltimore County Executive, number six, actually, on the list, the sixth Baltimore County Executive.
We're all alive, aren't we?
Ted Venn.
No, we're not.
Ted Venatoulis,
right.
talking all kinds of things. We're going to get into mayor's race, presidential race. talking about buying the Sun. I'll leave the Sun paper discussion with this. That if we've got Matt Gallagher and Bob Embry, and Ted Venatulis sitting at that table, that's an all-star team.
Yeah. Well, that is.
I'm optimistic about that as well. Ted, I can't let you. We got a lot of things to talk about. A sidebar. Anybody knows you, knows your passion and affection for the Speaker of the House. And I think of, when I think of you, I think of a couple of elected officials. I think of Nancy Pelosi, and I think of former Governor of California, Jerry Brown.
Jerry take a whole program.
I was going to say, he's your good buddy, running around with Linda Ronstadt and all that stuff.
Eagles.
In the past. Talk about your relationship, because word on the street is that growing up over there in Patterson Park and Nancy and Lutley, you all actually might have gone to a dance once upon a time. Any truth to that?
Well, I can't lie on this program.
Talk about how long your relationship was, what you think of Nancy.
And we did. We grew up together and bummed around together, and Tommy and I became her big brother, who was
her brother,
a mentor for both of us, my best friend. But
did he lure you to politics? Did being around that family?
No, I was interested in politics, but he and I really became close friends, intimate friends, in the course of Nancy and I getting together.
His dad's running the city at the time.
And his dad was running. Then he became president of the county, then became mayor, and then
so you went to a dance with the mayor's daughter, is what you're telling me. That's what this amounts to.
I never admit that.
All right, what makes Nancy so special? Because you've written about her. You think she is one of the finest speakers to ever grace that office. What makes her special?
I think she's extraordinary in many ways, and it took time for her to develop, for it to emerge, because the Republicans were dumping on her so much. She has certain qualities. First of all, when Trump tried to deal with her, he thought he was going to be dealing with a West Coast liberal cultural elite. No. He got the Baltimore brawler, the Baltimore street fighter, because that's where she grew up in politics. So she has that level of understanding of the street and what takes politics to work, coalescing people, giving here and giving there, bringing them together, going for what they know and trying to work.
Well, the patience she showed in orchestrating something that very clearly was a cover-up.
Oh, absolutely. And they didn't know when he thought she would be reelected again. And I said, you guys are crazy. You don't know Nancy. And she brought all of them in, one way or another. She
including
got
members of the squad.
And members of the squad. She went to the hometown of one of the squad members in Egypt or wherever it was, I think, traveled with her. In any event, that was number one quality. Number two, she is a strategic genius. She knows when to do something, when not. Now, she resisted the impeachment to reach the point where the country didn't have any choice. This guy was wheeling and dealing with a foreign country for his own benefit. That is such an easy
outlandish.
And this interference. There were a lot of other things they could have gotten him for. But she's strategic, and she's not finished with the strategy at this point.
It's been real quiet lately.
Yeah, and I think she needs the time. They needed the time to kind of recuperate
now
from this acquittal thing that they've gone through. And what's the next step? How do you make sure you blend this with an election so that you don't make people think that he's a victim?
Well,
you have to be very careful about that.
You wrote, Ted, and I want to ask you, you wrote a powerful article 7 days in February where you just took the gloves off, and you had had it, quite frankly, with the president.
Right.
And part of that article, I can remember thinking, well, that's Ted Venatulis at his best. You wrote, is he a mob boss, a thug, a mad monarch, a crazy dictator, ? Is he the Godfather, Dr. Strangelove, a Russian asset? Is he Mel Brooks leading the chorus of Springtime for Hitler, or is he playing the title role of Mussolini in a Mussolini musical, bellowing obscenities from a balcony while the crowd below shouts? Maybe it's Catch-22, where all Yossarians challenging our own sanity as we grudgingly tolerate one level of unlawful presidential behavior until he jolts us by escalating it to an even more unlawful level. You're echoing Nestor Aparicio.
Right.
My cat would approve of that.
With that as context, people are on both sides of the issue, even supporter of the speaker. Should Nancy have ripped up the speech?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was stunned when she did it, and I was so proud. She sat there and listened to a Mount Everest of lies from this guy in front of the country. He lied and lied and lied, and she sat there and had to quietly absorb it all without doing anything in decorum for the office and the event. And at the end, she did. She had to do something symbolic. Remember the last time she gave him the clap, the right. Pelosi clap? She stood up and ripped that thing up, and it was perfect. I thought perfect. Now, there are a lot of criticisms. How can you criticize that compared to the lies that that guy delivered during that speech? It's one of these false equivalency things. She did symbolically what she should have done. I don't think there's anything else. She tried to shake hands with him at the beginning, and he wouldn't do it. But who cares?
I want him symbolically and actually removed from office. And then the next question is, what happens next? Well, what happens over the next 6 months?
I think that is something that we all have to think through. Well, there is one objective, if nothing, is to beat the hell out of him in this election. That's what we have to do.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you there for a second, because you are, anybody who's known you, you are in no way a right-of-center Democrat. You're just not.
That's true.
I'm going to say you're a middle to left-leaning progressive
Absolutely.
Democrat.
I'm not
you're
way Democrat. Out either way. And I usually don't dump on people, as you know. Right.
But at the same time, because of your feeling toward this president and this national nightmare, you are really struggling with this potential of a Bernie Sanders candidacy. Why?
Well, I have no trouble with Sanders and what he's thinking, because in the end, here's the reason. We're not going to have Medicare for all. He's got a whole legislative process. We do want health care for all of our citizens, right? Every Democrat wants that. Every Democrat wants a minimum increase in a minimum wage. Every Democrat wants good health care. Every Democrat wants to help out those who need help. Every Democrat wants to keep the global alliances, strengthen NATO, do all these right things that the party has
Paris,
built up.
Just think little things.
Over the years, we've done this through legislation, through beginning with the Marshall Plan and everything. Trump doesn't know anything about any of this. But in terms of Sanders, all that's going to have to be legislated through Nancy, through Schumer, through a legislative process that will tone all these things. So we'll never give up our insurance companies. Never. We may improve the Obamacare. We may take the minimum wage from whatever it is up a few cents and do it. That's how America works. To think you're going to have a revolution. And that's what I don't like about Bernie's talk. He wants a revolution. What the hell? Are we storming the beaches at Normandy? I didn't know Churchill, but he is no Churchill. And that's not where this country is going. We need to do it.
Tell us how you really feel, Ted.
Yeah, that's why I tell you. I'm a favorite.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. But that's why we have to
get
to the
moderate. Here's
the
problem with your newspaper. It's only going to be certain people that are going to want to sponsor that kind of talk.
Well, it's going to be a nonprofit, so we're not going to worry about that.
Well, then I'm going to be your publisher.
Okay.
Matt, I'm here for you.
Former Baltimore County Executive Ted Venatos. Walk us through, then, as we go to air with this, and it'll air a week or so later. We're getting ready. We're coming up on South Carolina. Then we have, a few days later, Super Tuesday. How does this play out? You're the seer. You're the guy who's seen it all. How does it play out as we move toward June?
Well, we've got the moderate community has to come together. And I think people like Amy and maybe Pete, they're terrific people. Oh, great cabinet
they've
officers.
They've run great campaigns.
And they're great campaigns. And they're wonderful people with the right balance and sense. We're going to have to move out and come in closer for probably Biden or Bloomberg. Bloomberg's not finished yet because of Super Tuesday and the funds that he has. So they've got to come out. Steyer has to get out of there. It's a shame he's in there because he's hurting Biden. So Biden would win, set up by 5 or 10%, by 15 or 20%, right. Steyer weren't in. And that's going to be a big help for him in South Carolina. So we got to do that. We got to get to Tuesday players where it's got to hone down to the moderates versus versus Sanders. And I think at that point, there has to be a discussion directly between Bloomberg and Biden. They're both mature. They're both adults. They got to sit down and figure out who's going to go forward. And whether it's a money issue, Bloomberg, bless him, has agreed to fund everybody in the general election.
Right.
And Sanders, the idiot, pardon me, I don't mean that. He's not an idiot. He's a reasonable,
Nestor loves it when you do that.
But they say they're not going to take his money in the general election. Who are they kidding? The Republicans are going to have $1 billion. We got to match that. We can't match it with just, we got to have a lot of little people giving. But this is war. We can't fight. We can't come in where guys have machine guns and we got a knife. We can't do that. And so there's got to be a deal made at some point to get together to bring the party and the country to the middle, maybe a little left of center, right where we ought to be. And that's where we ought to be. And if Bernie goes to the convention, we're going to have to, it's going to have to be moderated. The convention will have to be debated. He's not going to have a majority. He's got to live with the fact that he's got a plurality, and then there'll be some negotiations around. And that's where I think at a brokered convention, and there's nothing wrong with a we've had brokered conventions before, and it turned out okay, where Nancy, Schumer, Obama, the big guys have to come in and call the shots. This business that that super delegates are evil, that's our elected officials. And the last time Sanders said he'd love to have super delegates support him, but we prevented them from voting on the first ballot. What kind of nonsense is that? To take our public officials and prevent them from voting on the first ballot. Who thinks of these idiotic things? And who thinks of this idiotic primary
DNC
season
has,
that we
this
had?
This has not been the DNC's proudest.
Well, four years ago wasn't either, right?
No, and because we got to get rid of these early primaries, what we talked about, Don? A regional system. Four or five regions packed together, each having about five or six hundred delegates, where the candidates have a month in between.
That's
they
what has to happen.
They can get to the same place.
Time.
They can travel better. Their expenses are less. They can get into regional television
markets.
Have a
month between each one.
And a month. And you can do that. You can start in January and do that. Four or five primaries. And and the party has to pull that together. That would make a lot more sense.
All right. Last place I want to go before Don takes us to the finish line. I want to go back to the city, and I want to go back to elections, and I want to go back to why we even did this. Hold April 14th. We've had six of the seven primary candidates
and we've
on.
Got
Sheila Dixon joining
coming
us next
on next week.
And we're going to reconvene all of them before the election. You live in the city. You're voting in the city now. I own in the city. Ted, the reason that I did all of this was the deterioration after Freddie Gray. My wife has had two cancer battles and two bone marrow transplants in the last 6 years.
Wow.
I've driven back and forth across the harbor to Hopkins. I've seen what's going on in the city. And we put our condo up on the market two summers ago. I can't get anybody to walk through my condo, okay? The places are selling for $200,000 and $300,000 less than what I bought it for. So every brick in the city, the impact of every brick in the city. Then I see some folks, and it's a little bit of a right-leaning editorial I saw the other day that a lot of businesses are waiting to see the outcome of this election to decide whether they're going to go more in or less in or all out in Baltimore. I know how much you love baseball. The Orioles are 18 months out on the end of a lease. Feels like yesterday that folks like you got together and built Camden Yards and stole the Ravens and made us a sports town. I'm concerned about all of it, and as much as I'm going to carry the flag against this mayhem down on Pennsylvania Avenue for whomever gets involved, I don't know that I can carry that for whomever wins on April 28th, and I'm gravely concerned about the reputation of the city.
Well, I have two thoughts on this. The next mayor, and I'm not made a judgment on it yet. There are a lot of good candidates.
And we've spent time with all of them.
We're not taking a position either.
Yeah. I don't think there are any great candidates. I think the city needs a person that has two qualities. One, the Schaefer quality. Fix it. It's a pothole. Fix it. remove the snow, collect the trash, fix the playgrounds, fix it.
By the way,
get it done.
His idea, basic, when we first started, they said that the next mayor, we don't use the word hate around here, but we use the hatred of incompetence.
They had to hate incompetence.
Well, absolutely. And you got to walk down, be a mayor, walk down the street, see a piece of trash, do what Schaefer's on, pick it up, put it in a wastebasket, call his public works director and say, there's trash on this street, clean it up. That's one. That's the basic structure of region of city government. You have to do that. The second thing, you have to have a vision. You have the vision of where do you want the city to go. These are two qualities that are hard to get in a single person.
So you're still an undecided voter.
Yeah, right now.
Okay, so hang on one second. So you're going to run for mayor now. Like if Bernie can run at his age and Biden, we can run. So we run. What is the vision for Baltimore?
I'll give you two or three. Just three visions that are practical. We've got to fix the Inner Harbor. There's opportunity now. Firm is in bankruptcy. Somebody's going to come in. They've got to have a sense of where that harbor place is going because it's a central economic engine of that with the port and all that we have there. That water is essential. So that's number one. What is the vision will be the new vision of the new harbor place. I don't know what that is, but they've got to. The same with the racetracks. What is the vision of racing? These are two big things, racing.
Bill Cole on WNST on Monday, by the way.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. What is that? Because that's a big player in our community. And there are two other major regional issues of that nature that they have to deal with in a strategic, visionary way where we have an opportunity to do that. That's number one for the mayor. Number two, the suburbs, particularly Baltimore County, have to kick in. Stop this nonsense. Right. There's got to be a regional, substantive approach, practical, pragmatic approach. Where can these, Anne Arundel, Howard, Baltimore County, and particularly, how do we work with them with their police departments, their fire departments, their first responders, their school system, recreation department? How do we make these things work better in the city? And we can't bank on the state for this because there are a lot of people around the state that don't particularly think the city's spending its money wisely, and the state has difficulty contributing and doing things for the city. So the regions have to pick up the ball, and we have to lean on them. As I will work with Kevin strongly and the other executives, we got the guys that you're bringing up here. The first question is, how do you think you can help the city?
And are you willing to get out in front and talk about it?
Absolutely. Talk about it. Do some things about it.
A strong Baltimore is a strong Maryland. It's strong for everyone.
Absolutely. It's the key economic ingredient of the region. Now, look what we're doing in Bethlehem Steel and Sparrows Point. This outfit is terrific.
Trade Point.
Mm-hmm. They have a sense. They're working with the port. I was a port commissioner for many years, and that whole watching Sparrows Point collapse, this was an icon, a legend.
And now your dad and my dad work there.
Absolutely. Right? Exactly. It is our
closing our back. Our the
home.
Food we ate as kids was because it's of
my, it's proudest moment.
Iconic. So there, that's important. And now you're bringing these guys in. I'd hold them to the fire on helping the city. It may not be popular. What the hell are they in office for? They've got to be in office to lead, which is a discussion we had with Kevin, you know. Every once in a while, you have to step out.
Bold.
And bring people with you, not just follow. That's important. You got to listen to your constituents. But there comes a time in public life when you have to step out and bring your constituency with you. And that's what has to happen with the city.
We are with Baltimore County
Executive. That's it. I campaigned against you.
I'm glad.
Before we let you get out of here, Ted, first of all, I want to thank our sponsors again, State Fair, Fadley's, Center Maryland, and Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtors. But Nestor's a music guy, and I bet he doesn't know this. I want you to fill him in on the music connection of the Venetoulis family, and believe it or not, the Beach Boys.
You'll love this.
Is this Jerry Brown related?
No.
Give him a little background on the Venetoulis and the Beach Boys.
I'm going to get that lunch over here over crab cake.
All right. My brother did not go to college. His folks said, you can go to college. He said, I want to go to the West Coast. And he did. He went out to the West Coast, and he got into the music business.
Nancy did the same thing.
You're right. You're right. So he went out to in fact, lived in Oakland. No, I'm sorry. He lived in Los Angeles. One of my sons went and lived there. But anyhow, he went out, got into the music business. He cut a little record that they did. Remember the old Bob Dean? What is it? Dean? It was a Dean show.
Buddy Dean.
Sock off, went on Buddy Dean, and he had a record, and it was a great little record that he wrote.
So your brother was a celebrity.
He was pretty good. He's pretty good. And they had him on all the shows here when he came back to town. But he started to get into the producing side. And he ended up working with Capitol Records, became a vice president, and became their main person finding talent. So the first talent he brought to Capitol were the Beach Boys.
Did he produce Pet Sounds?
He produced most of the Beach Boy albums. He wrote one song that was terrific.
God only knows.
How do you know?
That's my favorite Beach Boy song.
Me too. Great song. And in that movie, Love Actually, remember?
Your brother wrote God Only Knows?
Yeah, he wrote God Only Knows.
I'm drinking with you. I told you.
I knew that would be a good way to segue out of it.
But it's not over.
Burke's Onion Ring away from like paradise.
Let him finish. Go ahead.
Well, that's such a great song. It really is. But he then...
I may not always love you.
Yeah. He produced... He wrote that song. I don't know what other he wrote, but I know he wrote that one. And then he produced Linda Ronstadt, James Taylor, the Kingston Trio. All these were his projects. Sammy Davis Jr. when he recorded.
What was his name?
Bobby Nick Venet, V-E-N-E-T.
Nick Venet.
They shortened their names at that time and all that. And he
unethnicized himself.
His best friend was Bobby Darin. They were very,
Mac
very close.
Oh, the
Mac
shark
the Knife.
Bait.
Yeah, right. And the mayor. I mean, it was. Anyhow, he was really a fan. Then he passed away a few years ago. He was a smoker, and we couldn't get him to stop, and he died. But he was a legend. He started this whole idea of singer songwriters. It was, he got amazing. Out of the producing, and that's what he was
Ted
working
Venator.
On.
Now, look, you yeah. mentioned, I was going to let you get out of here, but I can't now because you just invoked Linda Ronstadt. Give us your best Jerry Brown story. How did you and Jerry Brown even meet one another?
Nancy.
You've been to Jerry's house once or twice.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, he stayed at my home, slept on the floor, because that's what he did. He slept on the floor.
I campaigned for Jerry in 76.
You should have. We all did. Wasn't he great?
Is that good?
Small is beautiful. That makes up for not small.
What's made him
first
a
of
great leader over four decades?
His brilliance. He's smart. The smartest politician. I mean, intellectually. He has a great intellect. He was Jesuit trained. He kept that relationship.
Serving others.
Exactly right. I'll tell you two stories. One, I was out in Oakland, and he was mayor of Oakland at the time, and his home was a big warehouse. You go up in his huge warehouse. He invited me to dinner. So I went up to dinner, and there he was with the woman who's his wife. I think she was chief counsel for the Gap Company or something. They're out there making big mounds of spaghetti, and there's this long table, almost as if you're in a monk's, you know, territory, and all these chairs. And here's who he had. He had a couple Nobel Prize winners. He had a couple of artists. He had a couple of musicians, rock musicians, and others. He had heads of departments. He had people that were just, I mean, they were brilliant, all of them. You sat around that table, and I can't envision any of us doing that. Maybe O'Malley tried to do a little bit of that, but with the intellectual power that was in that room, and he matched it. And I love smart people.
He was the best.
The best of all the politicians.
Why do you think
I hang out
with Mueller?
Yeah, well, you're right. Pretty smart.
Somebody who worked for him, Ted, and it comes out when you're saying a good friend of mine worked for him as communications director, and I said, describe. He said, let me put it to you this way. He said, here's what you got to know about when you work for the governor. He's going to have 10 ideas in a day. 6 or 7 of them won't make any sense at all. But pay attention.
Those are the
because the other 2 and 3 are going to be incredible.
You know, I may have learned that from Brown, but that's what I said to Kavanaugh. Look, I'm going to throw 10 ideas out. 9 of them are duds. 1 of them is a gem.
It's a pearl.
A gem.
You got to figure it out.
You better figure that out.
Oh, we're going to close with this. If you're running for mayor, Ted Venatoris lives in the city. You're elected on April the 28th.
Call Ted.
I'd give Ted a call. He may have some valuable advice. Nestor, April 16th, early vote. April 28th, democracy is not
a spectator sport. April 14th, we're going to be getting together with some people that are looking to run. the city of Baltimore.
What and a day we've had.
Ted's with us. We're really appreciative of Evan and everybody out here at State Fair, all of our great sponsors. We'll be back at Fadley's next week. Sheila Dixon, speaking of someone who wants to run the city, again, we have her next week as well as Frank Kelly. I am Nestor. He is Don. Ted Vanatoulis, big thanks to you.
My pleasure.
I hope this isn't the last time.
Thanks for joining us.
Our pleasure.
We are WNSD.net, AM 1570, Baltimore Positive, and we never stop telling great stories about Baltimore.